can run on for a long time.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. You're going right to the front lines of history in the making. Very shocking story just came over the AP wire. Former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, A-B-E, or Shinzo Abe, has just been assassinated. He was gunned down in a Western Japanese city while he was giving a speech for his party's candidate there to the upper house. And obviously it's a different time zone many times away, so it was likely what to us would have been late yesterday afternoon. Shinzo Abe is dead, shot dead by an assassin. From the name, it looks like the assassin was also Japanese himself. There was no known motive. So far, there's no indication that the guy didn't like Abe's policy. Shinzo Abe, when he was elected, was slightly more conservative than previous prime ministers. He served as prime minister briefly from 2006 to 2007, and then again from 2012 to 2020. Stepped down because he had colitis and he needed medical attention. He was out there campaigning. Very able guy, very committed to the American alliance, very committed to our policies in containing China. He stood up to the Chinese. And he strongly supported Taiwan's independence. So he will be missed. He'll be missed as an advocate for the mini NATO that's being created in the Pacific among Japan, South Korea, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, the Philippines, and Vietnam to contain the Chinese, the red Chinese, not the Taiwanese Chinese. They're good. All people are good. I'm not saying any people are bad. But the communist leaders in mainland China are bad. Shinzo Abe is dead. Now, I want to follow up on that in this respect. You have to be very careful about advocating assassinations because they don't stay local. They spread. I'm hoping that this is an aberrant thing, somebody, maybe a mentally ill individual. It's very hard to get a gun in Japan, so I don't know where he got it. I'm sure they're going to interrogate him and they're going to investigate this. But I'm hoping that this is not an indication of wider unrest in Asia. And by unrest, there's always unrest everywhere in the world. But I'm hoping that it's not the kind of violent unrest that's very difficult to contain. And so, when we talk about Ukraine and Vladimir Putin, I maintain, and a lot of people maintain, that the only way to stop Russia is for there to be a change of leadership. Vladimir Putin has got to get out of there somehow, one way or the other, and have somebody substituted who may be just as crooked as he is and potentially vicious as he is, because that's all they have in their leadership now, but somebody with a little more vision who says Russia can do very well just competing in a world market without invading its neighbors. Now, if that were a democracy over there, which it's not, it was a communist state, then it became a mafia state with about 10 years of seeming independence in between with Boris Yeltsin in charge, but he was as crooked as a dog's hind leg too, and it just set the stage for the oligarchs to take over, put Putin in power. So how does Putin get out? Now, in the United States, the president can be beaten in an election. Let's take George H.W. Bush. He was beaten in an election. He had a very comfortable life in retirement. He spoke a lot, influential guy. He had a good retirement. That is not possible in Russia. The head guy in Russia is riding the back of a tiger. If you can't get off a tiger, because he'll be eaten by the tiger. So he's riding the back of a tiger. He knows that the oligarchs are afraid of him and hate him. He knows everybody's afraid of him and hates him. He threatens nuclear weapons, nuclear weapon use. He hasn't done it. He doesn't mean it. It would be the end of Europe, but it would also be the end of a lot of civilization. We can't have that. The only way for him to get out, since he can't retire, he can't step down. There's nowhere in the world he could go in retirement. I don't care if it's Abu Dhabi, Bahrain. You know, they're not going to take him in China. If they did, be afraid for his life. Anywhere in Russia, be afraid for his life. The only way he can be removed is to pass away. Now he's ill. Apparently he has cancer. But apparently his specialist is under control. Maybe thyroid cancer. We're not sure. But typically what happens in those kinds of cases is that he's removed by a successor who's as crooked, venal, and vicious as he is. And that can include assassination. He has already killed more than six oligarchs in Barcelona, in Moscow, around the world. Suddenly these guys in their villas are found shot, stabbed. Their wives and daughters in a couple of cases were shot or stabbed. Putin's government put out word that they committed suicide as a murder-suicide. Six of them within a couple of months. Very few people commit suicide by stabbing themselves, stabbing their families. He was killed by the successor to the KGB, the FSB. Putin himself was an assassin with the KGB. But when we talk about Putin, it has to be talked about in this context. It's not right, and it's not going to happen, that the United States is going to have him assassinated. That's going to happen internally, and he's becoming increasingly unhinged. But this business in Japan with the assassination just now of Shinzo Abe, former prime minister, a little on the conservative side, but dedicated to the alliance with the United States, is very shocking, disturbing, because there's unrest throughout a lot of Asia. China, they rule with an iron hand, and if at any time Xi is seen by the rebel in the communist leadership, there's about 300 of them in this communist council, and there's some kind of consensus that somebody else should take over, they have ways of doing that there without killing Xi. And obviously Australia and New Zealand are democracies. Vietnam is a communist country. The Philippines is a corrupt country. But basically, by and large, they're united with us to contain mainland China. I just hope that this assassination business does not continue. I want to turn to something here in the United States. And this is a very disturbing thing as well. You know, we've talked about voter suppression. We've talked about laws being passed in places like Texas to make it harder to vote, especially in Democratic areas. Well, in Texas, there's some data to back that up. In the most recent election in El Paso County, El Paso County is where El Paso is. I've been to El Paso, nice little town. Beto O'Rourke was the congressman from El Paso. And in the election, mail-in ballots come in, and the last batch of mail-in ballots in an election there, 98% of them in the Democratic primary were rejected. 98%, because they didn't comply with a new state law that was very unclear to people. And here's what it is. There's more than 1,000 ballots rejected. Only 2% of them, of the ballots cast, were accepted. 2%. And this is a Democratic area. And sometimes the people in these areas, they're poorer, they're not as attuned to the law, they don't make any effort to tell them what the law is. And here's the sneaky little thing that the Republican leadership put in Texas. On your mail-in ballot, you have to put down some identification number. You're given the option of putting down your driver's license number, your state ID number, the last four numbers of your Social Security number. But they passed the law that said, whichever one you use, and you can only use one, it had to match identically the number you used to register. Well, I first registered to vote, what, 50 years ago? I don't have the faintest idea what identification I showed. I'm sure I showed a driver's license. I don't think we used Social Security numbers back then. But if you're in Texas, you sit there and you go, what number did I use 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 10 years ago, 2 years ago, 18 years ago? Was it my driver's license number? Was it my state ID number? Or was it the last four numbers of my Social Security number? And you take a guess, and you have a 1 in 3 chance of being right. You can't put them all down. You can't, if they say rejected, you can't go back and say, okay, let me try another one. What sense does it make to require an identity of numbers of these three possibilities from years ago, from the time when you registered? This is done to make it very difficult for people typically who are not as sophisticated voters. And they can be elderly with memory problems. They can be people who are impoverished, don't have a lot of education, don't follow up on the regs, and they just see a thing on the ballot that says you can put one of these three numbers. But they don't understand that it better match up with whichever one of the three they used 30 years ago. Any one of the three identifies them. Any one of them three identifies them. This is nothing more than a whack-a-mole thing where they're trying to trick people into having their ballots rejected. And this is going on in the United States. This is going on in Texas. This is because of the Texas Republican Party. Why does not Merrick Garland bring suit against that? Why doesn't Merrick Garland bring suit against that? It's irrational. It makes no difference. Its only purpose is to deter voting. And it is going on, and it just went on. We just got the data in from El Paso County, Texas. 98% of the ballots in the Democratic primary there were rejected. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, here's a funny one, and you need a little levity. I thought this was terrific. There's a comedian named Sacha Baron Cohen. You may have seen some of his stuff. He impersonates various foreigners. He'll impersonate a somebody from Middle East, somebody exotic, and then he will trick people into saying outlandish things and doing outlandish things, thinking that he's this guy. And he got sued for $95 million by a guy named Roy Moore. Now, you may not remember Roy Moore. Roy Moore is in Alabama, and he ran for the U.S. Senate. But he had a problem. When he was the DA of his city, he was accused of going to a mall and hanging out and trying to meet teenage, you know, underage girls. A very serious charge. And apparently there may have even been a court order preventing him from going to the mall. This obviously didn't sit well with the voters, and Doug Jones beat him in that election, the first Democrat to represent Alabama in the Senate in a heck of a long time. And poor Doug lasted one term, and then he was beaten in the next election. But Roy Moore has been nursing his, licking his wounds ever since. Well, he's also not the, you know, the sharpest knife in the drawer. Sacha Baron Cohen, who's an Oxford graduate, believe it or not, and speaks very upper-class English over there in, in London, England, impersonated an Israeli counter-terrorism expert who said he wanted to interview Moore, and he wanted to give him an award from an Israeli TV network. So Moore, you know, this is the only guy that probably called Moore and showed any interest in him at all. So Moore said, fine. He sits down, and Sacha Baron Cohen pulls out this device. He shows him, and he said, this is a device we've invented to identify sex offenders, and he points it at Roy Moore. Now, Roy Moore stopped the interview at that point, but yeah, I don't know, it's sort of like a divining rod, and you know, suddenly the lights will go off when it's pointed to Roy Moore. Anyway, Roy Moore sued him for defamation. Remember, defamation is the umbrella term for libel and slander. Defamation is when you say something about somebody, publish it that's false, and that lowers them in the esteem of the community. Libel is written defamation. Slander is verbal defamation. One exception to that is defamation on the radio or TV is considered libel, even though it's not written because it has such a wide audience. Well, in any event, the court threw out his suit, and the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York just came down and upheld that and said that Roy Moore's claim should be dismissed. Now, and they said it was clearly satire, it was clearly comedy. Here's something to put in the back of your minds. There's plenty of else to talk about, but first of all, if this were England, that case would have gone forward. England does not have a First Amendment. First of all, the head of state is also the head of the official church, whereas we have separation of church and state. But secondly, libel cases over there, defamation cases, they don't have the kinds of exceptions we have to protect people who want to comment about a public figure and make fun of them, or even if they say something that's not true, if it's a public figure, they really can't sue him for libel unless the public figure can prove that they knew it was untrue. Now, what's a public figure? Basically, people with name recognition, politicians, people, office holders, movie stars, that kind of thing. Because the theory is that they can retaliate or defend themselves, and they have access to the press too. For instance, over in London, England, Prince Harry, who left the royal family, is living in L.A. now with his wife and kids, sued a newspaper over there because they said that he had put in for security. And he tried to keep it quiet and then put a positive spin on it. Well, if you said something like that about a politician or somebody of his stature in the United States, everybody would yawn. He sues for libel. Court over there says, yeah, that's libelous. And they're going to try to assess large damages against that newspaper for basically truthfully saying he sort of slipped in, tried to get security, and tried to put a positive spin on it. They don't have a First Amendment. It's very dangerous over there to speak out. So keep that in mind. The other thing you've got to keep in mind is that Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch in this Supreme Court have both signaled that they would like to overrule New York Times versus Sullivan, which is a 1964 case that protected the media. 1964, a sheriff down in Alabama didn't like an ad somebody had put in the New York Times and sued the New York Times. It didn't mention them. It just said that some law enforcement in Alabama are acting badly towards civil rights work or something of that nature, which was true. And it goes to a verdict. He gets, you know, local state court, he gets money. The Supreme Court said, no. If you're a public figure, in this case he was an elected sheriff, you have to prove actual malice. And actual malice isn't what you think it is, you out there listening. It's not malicious like, in, you know, you got a bad intent. Malice simply means you knew it was false when you did it, or with even a little bit of investigation, you would have known it was false. Well, in this one, they didn't even name him, and it was an ad, and it was true. So ever since New York Times versus Sullivan, celebrities, politicians, famous people, you can comment about them. That's why we have a free society. We're not like England. Now, England has plenty of freedoms, don't get me wrong, but they don't have a First Amendment. So this is a great victory. Sacha Baron Cohen, he goes in there as an Israeli anti-terrorism expert with like a divining rod, and he pokes it at Moore, and he goes, there's a device to detect pedophiles. And I don't know, Moore threw him out. I don't know if the red lights went off or whatever. But, you know, you're entitled to very, very extreme criticism. And you should. It comes with the territory. You know, when you run for office, people send terrible tweets. They do all this kind of stuff. I've run for office. I've had my share of them. Seen them happen to other folks. That is the price of a vigorous democracy. And if it is left to Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch and some of the others, we're going to be like merry old England, which is going to shut down a lot of public debate. You don't see a lot of public criticism there about the Queen or any of this business, or the Prime Minister, members of Parliament, unless it's from a tabloid that's willing to take libel risks and pay a lot of legal fees. You want a break? Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
From out of nowhere, Felina has found me, kissing my cheek as she kneels by my side. Cradled by two loving arms that I'll die for, one little kiss and Felina goodbye.
I come from advertising investment ever. Partner with the Devil's Advocates and activate our loyal, educated, and engaged audience today. In-show interviews and sponsored special events considered across Wisconsin. Affordable digital and terrestrial ads available in Chicago and Minneapolis and directly on the Devil Radio app. Make a deal with the Devils and get the Devil's Advocates bump to your bottom line. Call or text 844-967-2789 today.
If you think you need a home inspection, you probably do. Hi, I'm Todd Osborne of Orion Inspections. And buyers, sellers, and even flippers, I'm talking to you. Knowledge is power when it comes to real estate transactions. You'll get an image-packed, searchable, digital, printable report of the condition of the house, things to keep an eye on, any safety issues or defects, and the knowledge to make smart, informed decisions. Your instinct is telling you to get an inspection, and instincts are usually right. Learn more or schedule today at orioninspections.com.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Dan of Monona, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind today? Dan of Monona.
Hey, Matt. I was caught this Ron Johnson commercial the weekend about his, he wrote the Right to Try bill. And, of course, I didn't believe him, so I looked it up on the Internet, and he sponsored it, which I, so... But, I mean, it's a no-brainer bill, but it also gives pharmaceutical companies a way around the FDA. It was also, he did it 5 years ago. It's like, is he hanging his hat on anything he did recently?
Dan, you hit a very important point, and I'm glad you raised it because I want to unpack that a little bit. First of all, the Right to Try bill, this reminds me back in the 70s and 80s, there was a thing called Laetril, and they made it out of peach pits, and it supposedly cured cancer, and it didn't. But they would say, okay, well, if I have cancer and I'm going to die anyway, what harm does it take to take, you know, why should I not take it? And some people, like Steve McQueen, I think, was one of them. Remember, he was a great actor. I think he may have been in Wanted Dead or Alive. I mean, this is an old TV show. Steve McQueen was a great actor. Anyway, they went to Mexico to get it. So all that that Ron Johnson has done is about 5 years ago, he put in this Right to Try bill that if you're, you know, really on your last legs and you want to try something, what the heck? Okay, what the heck? But there is a much more sneaky purpose to that ad. Because remember, he also very recently said people should take ivermectin. People should take hydroxychloroquine. Ivermectin is a dewormer for horses and cows. Hydroxychloroquine is an anti-malaria drug that the right wing says take. It doesn't help you. In fact, if you take ivermectin in sufficient doses, it can really polish you off. And he also said... He appeared at this right-wing conference, And a guy, a nut, said, if you get vaccinated, it'll give you HIV. Instead of calling him out, and this is a transcript, right from a transcript, I heard the audio actually, Jensen said, what you say may be true. What you say may be true, but, you know, go a little slower, you know, wait for data, something like that. Anyway, by saying the right to try bill, he is sneakily trying to tie in the harmful things he said about hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and getting HIV. That is what he is trying to do, Dan. So it's not so much that he's letting the pharmaceutical companies off the hook, because I think back in the 70s and 80s, the pharmaceutical companies didn't make a lot of Laetrile in the peach pit thing. And right now, yeah, they make hydroxychloroquine for malaria, and yeah, they make ivermectin for deworming horses and cows. But I don't know that there's going to be a huge spike in sales based on this. That's not the issue. The issue is the average person who doesn't read the newspaper, and this is all over the state, doesn't read the newspaper, doesn't listen to the news on TV or radio or listen to these kinds of shows, say, he's for the right to try if you're really on your last legs. That sounds reasonable. That's not what he said about ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. He didn't say if you're on your last legs. He just recommended it. Donald Trump recommended injecting Lysol into your veins. He said he was joking, but both in Arizona and in New York City, some guys were brought to the emergency room. You can get killed doing stuff like that. So the next time you see that ad, Dan, or you talk to anybody, it's a sneaky tactic to make it look like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine were mentioned by Johnson in the concept of last gasp, right to try. That is not true. He said that he said what I said he said, and also the guy goes, if you get vaccinated, it'll lead to HIV. Johnson said, what you say may be true, but, you know, get data or whatever. It's all false. It's all very false. But this ad is a sneaky way to try to slip under the radar and tie it into right to try, as if this is just a Laetrile thing when you had cancer. So thanks a lot for calling in. I want to give you an antidote to arguments you may hear, and we said it some on this show. There is a North Carolina case coming up, North Carolina case, Supreme Court has taken, and we are all very concerned that as a result of this case, they're going to hear argument in the fall, they will rule that state legislators can do anything they want with an election, even a federal election. And a state Supreme Court can't overrule them, and a state governor can't veto it, and it can't be disturbed. So they could say, we're going to pick the electors in the gerrymandered state legislature, even though Democrats get more votes than Republicans, it's gerrymandered. They can say there's no absentee voting. They can say Phoenix or even New York City, if they wanted to, gets one polling place and you can have 8 million people line up. See what I mean? All of this sneaky stuff. And they rely on the Elections Clause of Article 1 of the Constitution. The Elections Clause of Article 1 of the Constitution says, in part, the state legislators, legislatures can regulate the time, place, and manner of elections. Okay? Time, place, and manner. What they don't quote to you, and keep this very much in mind, is a second half to the Elections Clause of Article 1 that goes on to say, Congress may at any time make or alter such regulations. Congress may at any time make or alter these state regulations. All that has to happen is that Congress says, passes H.R. 1 or S.B. 1, Voting Rights Act, that just goes, we're going to have reasonable absentee voting by mail. Here's how it's going to be done. You're not going to have any of these numbers games out of Texas. You're going to have a polling place for every X thousand people. The machines are going to work. You're not going to load broken machines into the black areas, okay, which is what they do. You are not going to have partisan observers there intimidating people. We're going to get rid of the felony statute in Texas that says if you obstruct the view, quote, obstruct the view, end quote, of a partisan observer, you can be criminally charged, which they will do in minority areas. If somebody sitting at the table checking people in gets up to go to the restroom or steps back and the partisan hack who is scrutinizing the voters and harassing them loses sight of his voter for 2 seconds, none of that. Read the Elections Clause of Article 1. Google the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, the Elections Clause. And it says the state legislatures can regulate the time, place, and manner of elections. But the second half says Congress may alter such regulations. Congress is it. We have the Congress and we have the presidency. Nancy Pelosi passed S.H.R. 1 and S.B. 1. Could easily be passed if they suspend the filibuster for just that bill. Just that bill. And Manchin Sinema won't do it. Because if Manchin Sinema would do it, Moscow Mitch suspended the filibuster for cabinet appointments and Supreme Court appointments. Moscow Mitch did that. And then he goes, we shouldn't do it for what? To restore voting rights in this country? This is a big opportunity, and if we don't take it now, we're going to have to win the Senate by a couple of senators to ease out Manchin and Sinema. But by then, if Kevin McCarthy is Speaker, then the old H.R. 1 doesn't go anywhere. We have an opportunity right now. And under the Elections Clause of Article 1, Congress can alter the state regulations. Do it that way. Don't wait for Merrick Garland. Don't wait for a lot of jawboning and a lot of chin music. Just do it. And the sticking points are Manchin and Sinema. Going to a break. Lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. You know, this segment, I'm going to do something that I've not done before, and it was stimulated by a call-in yesterday from Wisco Paul, who pointed out that in right-wing radio, they will frequently speak positively of what they deem are the accomplishments of their side, even though they misstate them, whereas we tend to be much more on the negative side. When I say we, I don't mean just me. I mean everybody in the Democratic Party about what the Republicans are trying to do. And that's warranted, absolutely warranted. But we don't spend enough time saying the positive about what we do. And I would add to that, that we don't say the positive, the optimist, of how great our country is and how we're going to overcome our present division. So I'm going to do that now, and then I think from time to time going forward, I'm going to do it. The Democratic point of view, what has the Democratic Party accomplished? And I'm not going to go into, you know, Franklin Roosevelt and Truman and Kennedy and all that, which was substantial. But I'm talking about right now. What do we stand for? And this is an issue. It's not a personal thing. The Republican Party does not stand for it. And people can decide. One of them is Social Security. Social Security was passed in 1935 over Republican opposition. And they've opposed it in one way or the other ever since. They always say, we want to make it better. And their most recent proposal, you know, they do not have a platform as such. But I think you can fairly say that when their presidential candidates propose something, or their senators, that's their platform. And they have proposed privatizing Social Security by having the government put in a small amount for everybody, and you match it, and you put it in the stock market. Put it in the stock market, and you hire money managers, investment banks and others, to invest it. And then you just get what you get. So if you make bad investments, you're out of luck. Make good investments, bad. The Democrats oppose that. We have a Social Security pay-in, which really is a tax. It cuts off about your obligation, a little over $100,000 year income. People have suggested a donut, carve out for a little bit, and then restoring more payments by higher income people, which is not a bad idea. But basically, you're going to get a check based on the years, what you put in, and the years that you've been participating, and it's a guaranteed income. And what people don't remember is that before 1935, old folks, a lot of them would live in shacks in rural areas, no indoor plumbing, no electricity. They scrambled for food. We were really kind of a third world nation in some respects. Franklin Roosevelt modernized it. And I'm just going to appeal this to independents and Republicans who are listening. Don't tamper with Social Security. Do not. I mean, you can say things like the retirement age has been raised by a year or so. I get that actuarially, and you can continue to talk about that. But in terms of the funding of it, do not fall what the Republicans are doing, which in the long run would eliminate it. Social Security is important. Ron Johnson has said it's a Ponzi scheme. Ponzi was a guy named Charles Ponzi in the 1930s who had an idea. He was a criminal. And he said, send me your dollars and I'll invest it. People would send him his dollars and he'd spend it on fancy houses and travel and all that. And then when they'd say, okay, I want my money back, he would use the money of that was being deposited right then to pay back the old people, and he'd keep going. He was caught. He went to prison. The Social Security is not a Ponzi scheme. It's wrong of Ron Johnson to attack it, quite frankly, because you do pay in. And if you have a good income and then you don't live long into retirement, yeah, you're not going to get back everything you put in. If you have a modest income and you live to an old age, you'll get a little more. But the point is, people are not living in poverty. We're not a third world country. So that is one area that we differ from the Republicans. Another area is Medicare. Medicare was passed under Lyndon Johnson. Before that, nobody could have, you know, the life expectancy was very low. I think the life expectancy when I was born in 1947 was in the 60s somewhere. You know, now it's in the 80s. We have health care right now. Biden has proposed to keep Medicare solvent, that certain tax dodges that some people are using be eliminated, and produce about $200 billion to fund Medicare. What are they? There's a thing called passive income or pass-through income. And people with private partnerships and that kind of thing will say, well, now, the money didn't really come to me. They don't pay their fair share. It's simply saying, hey, if you are a secretary, a nurse, police officer, you own a small company or whatever, you pay your fair share. So everybody should pay his fair share. But these are the kinds of things the Republican position, they don't put it in writing, but all of their candidates support it, is that the state, the government will give you a certain amount. Say it's $5,000 a year. You go out and buy an insurance policy for that. And then whatever the insurance policy covers, what you get. Well, have you ever dealt with an insurance company? They do everything they can not to cover something. You need a lawyer in your family to argue with them. And you're not going to go out in the private market and buy any kind of decent insurance for the kind of money they're talking about. So these are simply devices, in my view, fraudulent devices to, in the long run, scuttle Social Security and Medicare. These are legitimate factual disputes. These are the kinds of things we should be talking about. Let me give you another piece, in my view, of good news, because another objective, frankly, of mine is to see our country unified. We have no enemies. I mean, we're all brothers and sisters. The ship I served on in the Navy, we had guys from Mississippi, North Carolina, obviously Wisconsin with me, New York, Wyoming, all from very, very different backgrounds. We worked together. We went on Liberty together. We stood watch together. We were friends. We're Americans. There's no Republican who's an enemy of mine, and there's no Democrat who should be an enemy of yours. We've gotten too divided. I'd like to see us come together. And I'd like to offer this. People say, oh, well, you know, our democracy is in peril. Well, some of the legislation that's being passed does imperil it. Certainly, the attempt by Donald Trump and his band of cohorts to overturn the election imperiled it. It didn't work. But consider the good that occurred. Unlike in our institutions held, Biden did win. He is the president. You may not like him, or you may like him. I like him a lot, but that's not the issue. The issue is we did have a transition of power through an election. It was under stress. I understand that. Look at the good. The military held in the Middle East, in China, in Africa, Asia. The military would have come in to support somebody like Trump. And people would have seen somebody installed in the presidency who lost the election. That happens a lot. That did not happen here. The military held. And I think it largely held because our military academies, West Point, Annapolis, the Air Force Academy, Coast Guard, Merchant Marine, have it instilled in them that the civilian control of the military. And they believe in our Constitution. And a lot of generals and admirals came out and spoke publicly saying that it was wrong to try to overturn the election. That would not have happened in any of these other countries. Another one is that the press held. They were not intimidated. All of the networks held. And to the extent that Fox went the other way, they did it for financial reasons. They weren't coerced. They did it for financial reasons. But ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, they all held. They all held. The judiciary held. There were people who were appointed by Trump. You remember when he contested the election, there were more than 60 lawsuits, more than 60 judges, a number of them appointed by Trump, a number of them by George W. Bush or George H.W. Bush, not by Democrats, said, no, this is ridiculous. Our core institutions held. And I'll go even farther than that. Sit down and think for a minute. Is there anything reasonable that the other party is saying when you put aside the animosities? And I will say it as a Democrat. I was twice elected chairman of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin. And I look at some of the things that the Republicans say, and I agree with them. Here's one. On our immigration issue, there has to be much tighter controls over immigration, illegal immigration into this country. Nation without borders is not a nation. That's one example. That's one example. On foreign policy, we've always been in agreement. It is the Republican Party now, Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump, Pompeo, who praise Putin. The Democrats stand tall, but many Republicans stand tall. Many, many Republicans stand tall. We're a united nation. I'm optimistic about the future, and I will from time to time highlight some of our party's accomplishments, and also not in a negative spirit, but suggest ways that we can unify. Going to break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.